This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now, your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everybody. It's June 23rd, 2017. What a gorgeous day it was. Even action-packed with the rainstorms, sudden deluge, and then return to sunny ways. It was like Justin Trudeau came in to save the day. What were you doing today when you saw the reports from several people about several things? 136 odd pages from Terry Patton, our Auditor General, with respect to everything that we've been talking about right here on VOCM Nightline, as well as Open Line, and back in the day, Backtalk. Concerning some obvious questions that we're not getting any answers from our government. We're getting them from arm's length institutions such as the Auditor General. Thank you, Mr. Patton. Thank you. Road quality. Government's preparedness for changing demographics. Compensation practices and government entities, provincial home support programs, and climate change. All of these being addressed by, having been addressed by, the Auditor General. I know what I'm doing tomorrow night. And all day Sunday, I am reading 130-odd pages from Terry Patton with respect to all of these chapters. And thank you to everyone who is paid by the Office of the Auditor General. Too many names to mention, but most of them are, well, you know who you are, and you're probably resting well and celebrating this weekend. Perhaps you're running away from the province. Because the performance audits of departments and Crown agencies is supposedly pretty scathing. I don't know, folks. I haven't read it yet. But if you want to talk about it, if you've read some of it, let's do it. Here are the conclusions. I will read these out because maybe you haven't seen the report from the Auditor General. There's some very interesting news pieces on our own website, vocm.com. Here's one that, beyond this and beyond what the Auditor General has reported upon, lead me to believe that sloganeering such as Stronger Tomorrow are now proven 100,000,000% ineffectual and meaningless. Here we go. Here's the report right there on VOCM's website. Premier Dwight Ball says it is a hard day with new projections on Muskrat Falls. He has uncovered a report prepared for an Alcor years ago that foresaw many of the current problems. Premier Ball says the report, done in 2013, only came to him yesterday. Let that sink in. He says former CEO Ed Martin did not make it public or share it with upper management. Let's just Google here. 2013, Premier Newfoundland and Labrador. Let's see. Who was Premier at that time? He says government will do everything in its power to keep rates as low as possible, but rates will rise significantly. The story says, of course, Ed Martin kept this to himself. He can't understand why, says the Premier, as the report foreshadows cost overruns, delays, and protests by Indigenous groups. He says that maybe there'll be an inquiry in the future, but not right now. So 2013, golly, trying to figure it out. I believe that was Kathy Dunderdale. Right? Tom Marshall was in there for about 5 months, interim premier, 2014. Of course, Paul Davis took over after a farcical leadership debate where we saw three individuals campaigning hard, and it all came down to 0.5 of a vote. You know the story. Kathy Dunderdale was premier in 2013, right? She was there for 4 years, former Premier Dunderdale. So Ed Martin kept this information from her. Apparently kept it from Tom Marshall. Seemingly kept it from Paul Davis. All of a sudden, somehow, this report made it to the desk of the Premier yesterday. Stronger Tomorrow? Anyway, here are the conclusions from the Auditor General's report, and then we're going to go to Torbay. We're speaking with my buddy and yours, Al. Here are the conclusions from the Auditor General. No offense to the premier of the province, Dwight Ball, for what I just said under my breath, stronger tomorrow, question mark. But frankly, you, Davis, Marshall, Dunderdale, if none of you are aware of what's going on with the CEO of Nalcor, that some report which is scathing and predicts the future, written by Nostradamus, I don't know, doesn't make it to your desk in 5 years, 4 years. What are we paying you for? Anyway, here are the conclusions from the Auditor General. The Department of Transportation and Works did not adequately manage aspects of provincial capital road maintenance and construction. We found issues with all stages of roadwork management, including planning, performance, and monitoring. Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Joyce was right. The department's roadwork standards were comparable to industry practice. However, departures from standards were identified. I need to get a new pair of glasses. The department did not customize project specifications to specific site conditions. Fascinating. Here we go. The department did not have a pavement management system to track road conditions, identify maintenance priorities, and support roadwork decisions. This is what I mean. Eddie Joyce was right. All those years in opposition, when he called and said there's politics pavement, not that he was the first or the last to accuse the government at the time of doing so, but jumping Jehoshaphat. Here it is. The department performed maintenance on an annual basis, says the Auditor General. However, it did not have a structured maintenance program in place that considered the asphalt life cycle. It was not performing roadwork based on an objective evaluation process. Sit down, folks. Sit down. The Auditor General says MHA priorities factored into decision making. Boy, I hope you have your dinner down. Roadwork deadlines were not met for any project we examined, and the department did not always take action to reduce the number of delays. On time and on budget was the mantra of at least more than one Minnesota Department of Transportation Works. There was evidence, said the Auditor General, that most of the quality control and quality assurance tests were completed. Contractor performance evaluations were sometimes not completed or incorrectly completed. I submit that to you without any further comment. If you want to talk about it tonight, let's do it right now. We're going to Torbay. We're speaking with Al Codner. How you doing, Al?
How you doing, Jonathan?
Going to throw myself off of this chair.
Yeah.
It's a short distance to the floor, but anyway.
Yeah, she's a warm day today.
Gorgeous.
We're going to have a little drop of rain right now.
Suppose.
Well, Jonathan, I'm going to talk about Kestrel.
Oh, yeah? Which one?
They're going... That's down in... down off Torbay Road. Is it Kestrel or the bulk foods bees?
Say again?
Where you can go down and get the bulk foods, you know, a lot of stuff.
Oh, Costco.
Kestrel, yes, Costco. I get all tangled up.
Sure, but I thought you wanted to talk about Fidel Castro.
Listen, I tell you now, they're going to make a big mistake, John,
yeah,
if they leaves down there.
How so?
Because there's no one going to win Galway. I'm telling you that now.
Oh, yeah.
We got a lot of people down here. We got Outer Cove, we got Pooch Cove, we got Torbay, we got Flat Rock, we got Ballin and Portugal Cove. Them are the ones goes down there, and they're doing all right. But if they make a big mistake going in around the woods in Galway, they're making a big mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. Why are they going to make a big mistake? Because I'll tell you one thing. I go to Costco once a week, and yeah, I see people from all parts of the province there.
Yes, they're from everywhere.
Yeah, they're traveling in to go to that joint. So what difference does it make if it's a few clicks up the road?
There's people down there, walks down there,
yep,
that's going to make it hard on them to go all the ways in around France, Canada, wherever that Galway is. I don't know where it's at.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's going to make it hard on them. And if they make a big mistake if they leaves down there, because no one from Torbay or all that what I mentioned just now is not going in there. Yeah.
All right, so where are they going to go?
Well, they'll go somewhere else, I suppose. But now, Coleman's, they're coming in around Christmas. Coming in with bells on.
Where are they going?
They're going down around Old Dominion somewhere.
Yeah, they're going over by Newfoundland Drive, aren't they?
Yeah, yep. And they're very cheap, and people from Torbay and all those places I mentioned. They're mad for them to come down.
I enjoy a drop of Coleman's. In fact, I was there today.
Yeah, they're very cheap, cheaper than the rest of them. I can't mention the rest of them now because there's about four or five of them down here now. They're charging too much, Jonathan. They're charging too much.
Well, too much for what? Because I can tell you, I find sometimes it's challenging for most of us to go shop from supermarket to supermarket to try and get cabbage at 20 cents less per pound or meat at a dollar less per pound. I mean, it's a pain in the arse, Al, when you factor in all the time it takes you to go from one place to another. You'll end up just going to one.
They're charging too much. Now, Coleman's, they're half decent.
Yep.
And they got everything in their stores. Everything. I was in there the other day, and I got a bit of turbot, inner salt turbot.
Oh, yeah?
I got that. That's in salt, and then I put it in the fridge.
Yeah.
That was in water, soaking. And I got that put in the fridge. I had mine take it out tonight now and have a meal and a few potatoes. But they got everything in their Coleman's. Yeah, they got everything. They're in Freshwater Road, I believe it is, or across from the laundry mat.
I was in there today, and I got myself about 3 pounds of Towton dough.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, they're very good.
Good service, too.
I noticed a couple told me they're mad for Coleman's to come down here.
Well,
likes Coleman's.
I like locally owned and operated grocery stores, and we can assume that the majority of them are. But it's always nice when one of these stores has a Newfoundland brand, too, such as Coleman's and Belvin's, for example. Right?
Yeah. I think it's the rest of those stores are here on Torbay Road. I think it's time for them now to go to Nova Scotia or wherever they belong to. I don't know where they belong to. I think it's Nova Scotia, is it? Or something like that.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I can see, listen, if I want to bring in a business that didn't originate in Newfoundland and Labrador, but Newfoundlanders and Labradorians want it, and you know they want it because they pay for the product. Who cares where they're from?
Every day they're putting up their foods, and people can't afford that. Now, they got smaller stores now spread all over the place, too, and they're expensive. That's, I can't say the name now.
Okay. Well, you don't have to say the name by
all. It's time for them now to get off of Torbay Road, because Coleman's is going to take her right over, and they're the cheapest you can get. And another place, Piper's, they're the cheapest. They can stay on Torbay Road, or stay on, they're the cheapest you can get too.
To the best
of people once.
I don't even know what one item in one particular store is cheaper than another. I mean, these things vary all the time, and that's what is fun and maddening about shopping via flyer, right? I mean, you go from flyer to flyer to look for what is and what isn't cheap.
Well, people know us.
Well, yeah, people know.
There's a big place down this Torbay and Outer Cove, Pooch Cove, Flat Rock, Baleen and Portugal Cove. There's a lot of people goes there, but they ain't going in there to Galway no more.
Well, I'll have to ask around. I don't think that will be the case. So listen, there are a lot of people right now supporting what you say. One of them, who's a regular follower of VOCM Nightline, says it's petty, but I won't be spending a dime in Galway. I don't know. I don't think that's the appropriate way to look at sustaining a local economy.
Whoever that is, he's right. They won't be spending because the people can't go in all ways and way in there. Yeah.
Why?
Because it's too expensive on gas, and in the winter time there's no one going in there. Yeah. And this individual, whoever he is, I don't know who he is, has got that setting up for the people.
Well,
he's not getting people going there to stores.
I like to shop local. I like to shop around, and local to me is buying the province. And You know, it's you got to spread your dollar around. Whether it's if you go to pizza in if you go for a pizza in Upper Amherst Cove, because it's the best pizza in the island, or if you go to, you know, Tops of Road Pizza because you prefer that one, or whatever. Yeah. Peter's Pizza, they're fantastic, and you know they're my go-to for most of my life actually. When they were on Patrick Street, loved it. Yeah. It's all about tradition and institutions, and I'll tell you, one of the traditions that Newfoundlanders, and I'm assuming Labradorians have, is going to friggin' Costco.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all I know is they'd be here about probably a week before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas.
Yeah.
Coleman's is coming down
with
bells on at Christmas.
Okay.
They'll be here with bells on, I'm telling you.
Well.
And they got specials on. And that. And the people at Torbay and all them other places want to see them coming down here. Yeah.
Al, I'll see you there. I do enjoy Coleman's as well.
I'll be there. I'll be the first one to be in the Coleman's.
Yeah.
Yeah. John, you have a good night.
You too.
And I think the Capelin, give them another week. They're coming in around Torbay Point now. I can see him right now, John.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Listen, you have a good night.
You too, brother.
All right, then.
I'll see you soon.
Nice talking to you.
You too, Al.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to go to the break. Afterwards, we're going to an island known as Belle Island right after this.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. Lots of interesting commentary about Galway and whether or not people will shop there. Most people are saying on Twitter, follow along at VOCM Nightline, that people will continue to do what people continue to do. The pettiness, says Goofy Newfie, of some kind of Danny Williams boycott will have zero effect as well. In my opinion, it'll flourish. Tim Eddy says, Costco employs nearly 500 people, but go ahead and be petty. There are no jobs needed in Newfoundland and Labrador. I said it to Al, I say it to everybody all the time. Shop local, shop around. That's the way it should be. You have to support your own. Otherwise, we'll continue to tell that stupid story of the Newfoundland lobster in the pot, which drags down the one that tries to escape. Frig off already. Let's be supportive of each other as often as we possibly can. Do your best to spend that extra dollar if it keeps the corner store in your bay town open, as opposed to driving into Costco. But when you got to come in for your, as someone said here, your 5 gallon ton jar of mayonnaise, do that too, right? Spread your money around, folks. Really, sincerely, that's how we should operate. And frankly, I think Goofy Noofy raises an interesting point about boycotts having zero effect. How do we measure boycotts? I suppose the market will dictate demand, but I mean, you can't really measure, to the best of my understanding, whether or not a boycott is successful. What do you think? Am I missing the boat on that? Give us a shout right here. Patrick Myler is taking your calls. We're going to go to line number two. We're speaking with the mayor of the town of Wabana, His Worship Gary Gazine. How are you, sir?
Good evening, Jonathan. I agree with everything that you're saying, is to buy local because it's supporting the local economy. And as someone who's been on the Ferry Users Committee for over 40 years, I'm only 59, and I'm planning on running in the next election. I just spent 2 hours in the lineup yesterday doing physio. It took me 6 hours to get 1 hour in. I came back what I thought was early to spend 3.5 hours in the lineup this afternoon and get into the hospital for my checkup, 6-week checkup, and say I'm doing okay. So I'd like to talk about, I heard the tail end of it today, and we'd like to be unity with all the ferry related communities, because at one point I was representing all the ferry related communities in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to stand together. But the mayor of Fogo made a comment today that they're going through a hardship. And you know, we've gone through 2 years of hardship. They have our legionnaire down there now with their veteran up on the hoist or dry dock down in the harbor.
Up on the sticks again.
And Flanders got in the water yesterday.
Yep.
To find out today that she's going to be there for another week because there's something wrong with the thruster system. And we went over today as the Fair Users Committee, had a great meeting. We proposed to them a schedule, and they said they might have to tweak it a bit. And we all walked out of there happy. Lo and behold, I get off the ferry tonight. One of the crew members says, come on, Gary, you got to fight for the enhanced. I said, why the enhanced, bud? Because we're not getting to Flanders for another week. And the mayor of Fogo get time to say they're going through a hardship. And the Flanders and the Galatea would do us. Well, the Galatea is here 2 days or 3 days. She has been broke down once. And every supper hour, she's out for an hour and a half, 2 hours. The two boats should be load and go. And every trip, you're looking at two and three loads of traffic in Portugal go, and two or three loads of traffic on Belle Isle. So the fact that the doctors just give me a clean bill of health, I'm prepared to chain myself onto the Beaumont Hamel, and I don't care if anyone else wants to do it, but the Beaumont Hamel will not leave Belle Isle as long as we don't want to have our Flanders here. And I think until we get our Legionnaire back to main boat, that the Flanders and the Beaumont should sail side by side to each other. It should be load and go all day, because the people of this community are very, very frustrated. And you just mentioned a figure of 500 people. That's stuck in my mind, because every morning at 4 o'clock to about 7 o'clock, there's 500 people that travel back and forth to get them to work at 7, 8, and 9 o'clock.
And the Galatea only takes 16 cars and 70 passengers.
That's correct. And the Beaumont Hamel, they used to take 180 in Fogo Island when it first went on the run, is down now to 105. And twice so far this week, it got to a passenger load capacity when the people went over the capacity of what you can take on the ship. So as soon as I get off the phone with you, I'm going to now call the marine manager and ask him, effective tomorrow morning, that we'd have enhanced on the Beaumont Hamel, and we have the small, mighty ship Galatea that was, by the way, she's only 66 years old, Jonathan.
Yeah, well, before she was known as the Hamilton Sound, which was owned by the government, and the government said, this is a piece of junk, it's too old, we're getting rid of it. And it was purchased
for
$240,000, retrofitted for $1 million, and I don't know for how much. I knew at one point how many thousands of dollars a day this is being rented back by the government.
$5,800.
There you go. A day.
A day.
And it probably runs better than the veteran, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. She's on the... Well, she struggled a lot through that ice. And I don't think an icebreaker is ready for the ice that we had this year. But you've got to try and provide safe, reliable ferry service for the island communities that need them. So Mr. Shea gets on today and says that Galatea and the Flanders is good enough for us. Well, he got our boat. That's not fair, sir. And I think I owe to the people of Belle Isle to stand up and say, enough is enough. And I'll leave you with that, and we'd hope that somebody else would call in.
Yeah.
Because we're only trying to do our due diligence to the people of Belle Isle who got to spend 12, 14, and 16 hours for an 8-hour shift. It's not right. It's not fair.
No, it's not fair. It's also not fair that, you know, we're renting the Galatea. If it truly is $6,000, $5,000 a day, we're looking at just about $2 million a year.
I'd say they're after getting about $6 million out of a ship that they sold for $240,000.
Yeah. Now, you know, if that's diversifying the economy, it's an interesting approach. And, you know, that is a dig to all levels of government that continue to operate with this level of questionable efficiency. This on top of the veteran, the Legionnaire, that seemingly, the more we learn about it, there are more and more crapshoots.
They're going to give us a big lunch for our Legionnaire, but she's going to be worried by the time she gets here.
My son, why isn't that wharf done?
And the problem we heard today is not the Portugal Cove wharf. It's not a Belle Isle wharf that's... hold them up. It was the first time we ever heard that. So I want to stand proud right front and center for the people of Belle Isle and want to run into the next election. I'm going to let them know that I care for them. And I care tonight to say, no, sir, you're not getting our Beaumont Hamel. Mm-hmm. And we want our Legionnaire back as quick as we can get it. And if we don't get the Legionnaire, we want the two biggest vessels in this province to try and take, because we've been suffering and frustrated for close to 2 years now. February 16th was the day we were promised the Legionnaire. And you know, there's people that had to go to university for 7 years to learn how to become an engineer. They got the lineups in Portugal Cove. That cost them $1.8 million. That's still not being used. And now they've spent probably $10 to $15 million on the two wars. And we still don't have a boat in service. But we think the eye at the end of the tunnel is getting very close.
Yeah.
So we hope it's close enough for the people to be on that new ferry that they so deserve very soon.
Thank you for your time tonight, Your Worship. We'll speak soon.
You're more than welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Frustrating. Very frustrating. Very real. Very legitimate. What is going on with the Department of Transportation Works? If you look at the, as some have said to me, a scathing report by the Auditor General with respect to the road maintenance, and I know it's going to be scathing. I can't wait. I'm going to eat a whole bag of popcorn while I read that one. On top of the ferry issues, where is that inquiry into Humber Valley paving, by the way? There's a 48-hour writing marathon happening right now. Not sure when it started, but it is happening, I believe, tonight. 75 Barber Drive in Mount Pearl. That is a message coming from my buddy Matthew LeDrew, who is the owner and operator and publisher of Engine Books, right here in Newfoundland and Labrador. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Mr. Angus Anderson. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Congratulations. I am in awe of your very clever campaign on Muskrat Falls water.
Thank you.
Good job, sir.
It about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I heard about or from you a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, by golly, this is going to really impact the protest or the level of protest or at least the level of attention turned towards the protest itself. Angus, tell us about what it is that you have done and tell us how effective you think it has or has not been.
Well, about 3 weeks ago, I decided to make a water bottle label and where NALC and the Premier are pushing Muskrat Falls where they were not meeting their promise of clear-cutting Muskrat Falls. And not clear-cutting will create methylmercury, which everybody knows is quite simple. So with this logo, I'm sure you can see it right now, it's a picture of Muskrat Falls Nam. Two logos on it, the Liberals and the PCs, who are responsible for this project. Mm-hmm. And on the bottom of the label is 10% methylmercury. So the objective for this water bottle is to hand it to people and have them look at it and say, ask them, would you drink it? The main reason is because our government will be allowing us to drink methylmercury water if they don't do the clear-cutting.
But, okay, so we've seen this week that the water levels are being lowered.
They are being lowered.
Which is, of course, late.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I did the water bottle campaign at Sheraton Hotel where Mr. Ball was spokesperson or something like that for Fortis.
Right.
We got there before he arrived, so we were able to set up. And half an hour into it, hotel management said, we can't be there, and said, we're not bothering anybody. And so he went in again, and about half an hour later, the RNC shows up. So we knew they went straight into the hotel, so we knew right away RNC was called because we were there doing this water bottle campaign.
So the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary were called to watch you give water bottles out to people.
Wish it was. apparently management of the hotel called them to try and get us to move off the hotel property.
Because they have a contract with water bottle distributors?
I do not know why.
Okay.
And apparently, according to management, we were making people uncomfortable, so I guess the campaign was working.
Okay, so, you know, business is business, right? But, yeah, I mean, you're there, your freedom to assemble and a right to protest, whether or not it is on private property is something to be discussed, right? I mean, they have a right to protect their own business interests for sure, but this was not a marathon protest. This was a protest that happened over a couple of hours, right? And honestly, if people get uncomfortable over a message on a bottle, mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned, sir.
Well, it's not over there because I'm not doing this just one conference. I'll be doing this throughout the summer at various locations. And since I've started this 3 weeks ago, we're getting support now from the people fighting Site C Dam in British Columbia, mm-hmm. and the people that against the Manitoba Dam also that recently had a big flood.
Part of the problem with the methylmercury issue, sir, is that it takes a number of years for this data to become manageable and usable by bureaucrats and government policy makers. But we live in a time where we're making policies to combat bioaccumulation. We live in times where we're making policies to combat environmental changes and mitigation of potential disasters. And by all accounts, what groups such as the Land Protectors, I'm not sure if you're a member of them or not, are trying to accomplish is that we should be using the precautionary principle in a case such as this. And it's a valid perspective and it's a valid opinion that needs to get heard. So, fine, you were outside of the Sheraton Hotel, and great that you have British Columbia behind you. What about that place in the middle known as Ottawa? Are you sending any of these bottles to the members of Parliament, all 330-odd of them?
Well, thank you for mentioning the member parliaments, because a few weeks ago, the five candidates running for NDP leadership did their live broadcast here in town. Mm. I met with all five. I told them about this project.
Yeah.
And they are all in full support of me doing this project. One of the candidates, Charlie Angus, I'm sure you heard of, is behind this project altogether, and will support me with it all the way. And with that in mind, I'm waiting to hear back from him that if we will take a sample bottle made into the House of Commons, and if that could happen, that would be amazing.
It would be, but it's still the third party. You know, out of four parties, and the fourth party has two members, it's not as significant as having a bottle of that water on the desk of the Liberal government, for example, or even at least the seven members of Parliament that are represented by the Liberal government from the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. Good for you. And five leadership candidates for the third party in a federal system is a fantastic achievement. I'm not taking anything away from that. It's great. It's a start. I'm curious, and I look forward to seeing your bottle of water branded and sitting down on the desks of the governing party, because we have a prime minister who is doing his darndest. The most, I think, First Nations people's minded prime minister since Paul Martin, who really wants to make, or at least says that he wants to make a difference. The time is upon us. You know, the opportunity is there for you to seize, as far as I see it.
Well, I'm hoping that even though they may be NDP, may be a small party, if they can get that bottle into the House of Commons and have people see it. Mm-hmm. And on that issue, too, that the bottle itself is like a simple 500 milliliter bottle. You can take it anywhere.
Yeah.
I did give a bottle to Premier Ball and Siobhan Cody while they were going into the hotel.
Uh-huh.
Also gave it to Dwight Ball's assistant. And I handed out about because there was few of us doing this that day.
Right.
And there was seven people all supporting this project, and I thank them for being there with me. Because this is not my own project. It's I'm doing this to support Labrador Land Protectors in their endeavors against the NDP, PC, and the Muskrat Falls project.
I see this, sir, as a tremendous fundraising opportunity for you as well. I mean, you can... if you know, support comes in many ways. There's political support. There's also financial support. Selling these bottles of water as a fundraiser for organizations or for environmental causes, to me seems to be a perfect fit. And I just want to add, finally, you don't necessarily have to have members of Parliament walk into the House of Commons with the bottles of water. All they have to do is walk in with the labels and stick it on wherever they want.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. When I was meeting, I had a chat with Premier Bob before he went into the Fortis Conference.
Right.
And I asked to have a chat with him one-on-one, not as the Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador, because we know the Premier is behind Muskrat. I wanted to talk to him as a member of Labrador and Aboriginal Affairs, because he holds that position. And to me, him holding that position and backing Nalcor makes the position redundant. Like, we have no voice in the House of Assembly as long as she holds that position on us.
Interesting. That's a perspective I would like to speak with you about next week. Mr. Anderson, we do have to go to our break. Call me back next week, please. There's so much more to chat about. But I have one quick question before we go.
Okay.
You didn't bottle this water. From where do where does the water come from?
I'll leave that for people to think about.
Okay. I love a good mystery. Thank you, sir. And a good weekend to you, and I enjoyed the chat. I hope to hear from you soon. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We're going to go to the break. Great conversation. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to line number one. We're speaking with Wayne Thompson, who is a firefighter, a fighter of fires. Mr. Thompson, thank you for doing what most of us are terrified of. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jonathan, it's a pleasure to be on your show, but I'm a retired firefighter. Actually, Jonathan, we've talked last year.
We did. I recognize your voice.
Yeah, Jonathan, it's a beautiful night here at Catamaran Park. I'm calling actually to bring the attention of the public and the people who are interested. The Grand Falls Winter Fire Department are hosting their third annual Ultimate Tug of War Challenge for Muscularity on July the 22nd in Grand Falls, Windsor.
Go ahead.
So basically what's happening, Jonathan, we initially started off at it, and I guess to bring it back, it was started in St. John's Regional started the Truck Pull Challenge, and we just we piggybacked basically off of that, and this is our third. And last year, for the first time, we introduced, not only was it the adults, but we introduced the children competition as well. And I had 4 teams of children participate, and that was sponsored by Islander RV, which I got to say, Tony at Islander RV, I mean, did a great job. He solicited the prizes, and I mean, you know, it was great. But I want to bring the attention that the deadline is July the 1st, and last year again, Con River were the champions.
Right on.
And they won it 2 years in a row, but I want to put a challenge out to, we have dealerships, car dealerships, and we have that participate, but I'd like to put a challenge to all the car dealerships that are in the area, Grand Falls, Windsor, Bishop Falls, Botwood, Gander, Lewisport, all the fitness centers, the Zumba clubs. I want to put a challenge out to these people to help us raise some money for muscular dystrophy. So put the challenge out. So if you're an adult team, you have to have a team of 10. If you're children between ages 5 to 15, you have to have a team of 5. You don't pull a fire truck. The adults pull a 35,000-pound fire truck.
Okay.
But the children, they will pull a side-by-side as dressed as a fire truck.
Neat.
Yeah, no, I got to say, Tony did a great job at OLRV. They did a superb job in souping this up to be a pumper. And you still got to pull it 100 feet. So I got to say that this event don't go without having some big corporate sponsors that help us out along the way, like TRA, Sean Daly and his staff at TRA.
Right on.
Bill Gillingham at Sobeys, all teams, and like Alan Harvey. I mean, these people are superb. They just jumped on board without even hesitation, and they continue to support. And not only do we have the Truck Pool Challenge, but we also have games, and we have the Bouncy Castle, and, you know, all kinds of stuff for the children, who, and not only the children, but anybody who participates. So I'm putting a challenge out to everybody. Like, you only got a week away to register, and I'm looking for a big support this year.
Where do you register?
Well, you just call the fire department and register team at the fire department. It's 489-0430. Pick up a registration form, pick up a sponsor sheet, or call myself at 486-3343, and we'll just get the team registered. And the deadline is July the 1st for the simple fact that everybody that participates gets a T-shirt for participating,
oh,
and
cool.
I need to give the supplier enough time to have the T-shirts on hand.
What is your target amount of money that you want to raise for multiple sclerosis?
Muscular dystrophy.
Pardon me. I thought you said MS. You said muscular dystrophy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
I've been doing this for over 25 years.
Producer Patrick Myler, pass me the Q-tips. I got to get the wax out of my ears. You go right ahead, Wayne. Tell us about muscular dystrophy. Pardon me.
It's not good. There's no set target, Jonathan. My thought process has been and still is whatever we raise tomorrow is more than what we had today or the day before. And that's my thought process. As long as people have fun, I'm not, you know, and we raise whatever it is.
All right. So this is the third year you've been doing, and clearly you've had success. And you're building towards a target, though, no?
We had great success. Last year, we raised over $7,000. The year before was a little over $6,500. So, I mean, every year we're gaining, you know, more money, but it's all for the needs for our clients who has muscular dystrophy, Jonathan, no matter what it is. Like I say, I've been doing this for 25 years.
Wow.
And for the first time that I've been doing this, and I'm sure it's the first time that we're having the CEO of Muscular Dystrophy participate in this event. So we're going to do something different this year. We're going to have, after the competition, we're going to have a dinner and a meal put up by the fire department in recognition of those that participate, but also in recognition of Barbara's appearance. And we're going to recognize some big supporters of Muscular Dystrophy over the years that, because I do not only the Truck Pool Challenge, we host the Curling for Charity, and we host the Muscular Dystrophy Boot Drive as well. So all the people who've helped us out along the way over the years, we're going to recognize these people at this event.
Sounds to me, besides the car dealerships, you should go off to chiropractors, because if you're pulling a vehicle, geez, Bob, come on.
I gotta tell you, Jonathan, we have... over the years, the three years we've been doing this, I do have, and when it comes to teams, it could be male, female, mixture, but I've had for the last 2 years one female team participate, and they have fun. And the prizes is, the way the prize structure is, it's not because you have the fastest pool, but there is a prize for the fastest pool. There's a prize for the slowest pool. There's a prize for the team that raises the most money. And there's also a prize for the team that's most spirited. But as long as everybody comes in that fun, I mean, that's what it's all about. The fun, participation, and to raise money for our charity.
Thank you for everything that you do, Mr. Thompson. And as a retired firefighter, what sort of designation do we provide to you?
Well, it's the pleasure of helping somebody and helping those who need it. That's my pleasure in everything.
Lovely. And has anyone ever in the history of you ever referred to you as Mr. T?
Absolutely. Absolutely, all the time.
Do you enjoy that?
Well, you know something, I mean, my friends always call me Mr. T.
Okay.
It just
struck me as something that you might like to be referred to, and I'm glad that my hunch paid off. Thank you, Mr. T. We will speak with you again. Good luck.
Take care, and, you know, like I said, hopefully we can get the teams next week is the deadline. So, come on, teams, get your bodies together and start registering. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend. Good luck.
Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye. And if you are interested in contributing in any way, check out the number that I have tweeted out, Wayne Thompson's phone number. And, of course, you can see it right there on my Twitter account. And because Twitter has recently changed its interface, I can't seem to call up my tweets. So there it is. It's out there somewhere. That's it. We're going to go to the news at the top of the hour. We will be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to go to line number one for the second time this week on a completely different subject, focusing on the wonderful, burgeoning, successful, beautiful district known as Whitburn. Counselor Peter Pettipaw, a.k.a. Counselor Squiddy, how are you tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm pretty good, I got to say, after the news today. Still a bit dumbfounded that it came out of left field. I wasn't expecting the judge to make a ruling today, but something to be happy about anyway.
It is something to be...
to make me feel like royalty now. He got me on twice in 1 week.
Well, you know, the check's in the mail, right? Yeah. In all seriousness, Councillor Pettipaw, we are discussing Whitburn Elementary, which seemingly, as a result of a court decision, is going to stay open.
Yeah. The judge may... the ruling today saying that the school board trustees didn't have the authority to make the closure the last time they did. So here we are.
So we were here once before, and it was essentially not even appealed. It was just relaunched. What is to prevent this from bringing in a third sequel as almost bad as Attack of the Clones?
I liked Attack of the Clones, but...
you did?
Nope. Milton Pete, yeah, I liked the movie, actually. Revenge of the Sith was my favorite prequel, though, so
well,
don't hold that against me.
Well, there is a seven-second delay, so we've struck that from the record. That's all I have to say, because it was a bad one. Just kidding.
I think the main thing that we have going for us right now is Milton Peach is no longer on the board. He can deny it as much as he wants, but anyone out here will say the same thing, that we're all pretty sure the man had a vendetta against us for some reason.
Okay.
There's no other explanation for how much he wanted the school to be closed, to be pulling everything he was pulling.
Why would a school staying open or not staying open fall upon the shoulders of one individual? That doesn't sound like a good way to govern.
No. Well, for one, he was on the Board of Trustees before they were appointed by the minister at the time. And he was trying to close it then, and then when he got put on the board as an unelected appointee, he was still trying to close it. So he was very vocal about his opinion that the school needed to be closed. So that's my firm opinion, that without him on the board anymore, it makes our job a lot easier.
So where do we go from here?
I believe the school board trustees right now, the current elected board, is having a meeting tonight, and they're going to decide what's going to happen, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect a lot of sour grapes at this meeting, Counselor, or will are you expecting everyone to accept this as the new reality?
Well, the current board is elected, unlike the previous board that voted for the closure, so I expect that they're much easier to deal with than the past board, and I don't foresee too many issues going forward with them.
Okay.
That's my personal opinion. They seem like they're all fairly easy to get along with, to deal with, and it's a lot easier this time around from what I've been told, what everyone's been saying.
So the town of Whitburn is going to sleep easy tonight.
As long as the government didn't make a decision on the closure or the composting facility at 5 o'clock before everyone went home out of it for the weekend.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned that. That is certainly something that we still need to pay attention to. But, Peter, where do we put the level of analysis on the lack of logical transactions that have occurred over the past couple of years. How does the town of Whitburn send a message to the rest of the province in terms of a lesson learned from this? Where do we pick the pieces up?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing for us is we're one of the only municipalities left on the island where the average age has been decreasing. I mean, if you look at this current census that came out this year compared to the last census, I think we might have been down actually 12 people living in the community, which is not a whole lot at all. But our average age has gone down drastically. A lot of the older people in the community have either moved out or died off, and a lot of younger people are moving in with children, as evidenced by the current school population at our elementary school and the fact that it's ever-increasing and nowhere handy to what formerly appointed Board of Trustees number said.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that going for us. One big thing that's been holding the town back is the constant threat of the school closing. I know I was talking to one police officer, actually, who works in the area, who was looking at moving to Whitburn, but because of the imminent school closure, he decided not to move here. So, I mean, he's not the only one that's been in the same predicament with young children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping now with the school remaining open, and hopefully the new board will keep that going and not put us under review again, that'll make everyone's lives out here a lot easier, and hopefully we can get the population up even more.
This certainly would be an incentive to do so, there's some great political capital here as well. Congratulations on this victory to you and everyone else in Whitburn who was supporting this decision. And yeah. I can only imagine, what was the name of the elementary school that the Whitburn kids were going to be shipped to?
Down to Woodland Elementary down in New Harbor. And I mean, we were looking at the numbers there a few weeks ago, and it's my understanding that with the Whitburn kids and the Woodland kids put into the same school, there wasn't enough room for them to begin with.
No, and
for
I was
this upcoming year.
I was going to say they're no doubt breathing a sigh of relief at this decision, because they will no longer have to fear having an overcapacity school. Peter Pettipaw, thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend. Hope to see you early next week.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. And I just want to say a big congratulations to everyone on the Save Whitburn Committee and the Whitburn School Council for all the great work that they've done over the last couple of years and making sure that it got to court and we got the outcome that we did.
Wonderful.
Without them, we wouldn't have had this outcome today.
Take care of yourself, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. And for those of you who are continuing to ask, no, David Marr, I will not engage Peter Pettipaw in a squid-eating competition. I had 2 fish cakes for dinner. I have heartburn. I just can't eat fried foods anymore. Don't get old, everybody. We're going to line number 2. We're speaking with Diana Moulin. Hello.
Dana Moulin.
Hello, Dana Moulin. How are you?
Jonathan, good. And how are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Pardon me for...
Since I've talked to you, actually.
It has been a while.
Yeah. I'm calling you tonight because I go to the Lions Maxims camp every year. And we're having trouble this year trying to find a registered nurse or an LPN or a paramedic that would be able to take time to go to help us.
Wasn't that the same issue last year, sir?
Yeah. And it's a paid position, too, right? So...
Did you find one last year?
Yeah, our own nurse was able to come back last year because she switched holidays with someone, and they're into the same predicament this year.
So you're looking for a licensed practical nurse or?
A registered nurse or a paramedic.
To go to camp?
August the 13th to the 19th.
August 13th to the 19th.
In Bishop Falls, Beta Spear Highway. To the Lion Max Sims Camp.
Okay.
And, John, it was a lot of fun because we have campfires, we have boat rides, we have aerial rides, we play sports and games, and it's a good bit of fun for someone, right?
I'd say. I love camp.
And I tell you, John, I had a stroke 7 years ago, and that's the only trip that, like, a lot of us, like myself, really gets once a year. So without one of those, we're not allowed to have to camp, right?
And who was Max Sims that this person got a
He was a Lion member from Grand Falls.
He was a Lion member. Okay.
Yeah. And I've talked to different hospitals and stuff, and I still haven't found no one yet, right? So I said the only other resort was to talk to you guys, right?
Well, we're here for you, sir. It's your show. It's not ours. What does this particular camp do during the rest of the year?
That I don't know. I don't know. But I know this, the camp goes all year round, but I don't know. But unfortunately, you've got to have a nurse there for insurance reasons and stuff.
Right.
There's got to be a nurse there in case something happens.
And I guess the Lions don't have a resource for you.
No.
Okay.
But I've been contacting different hospitals, and because I look where I had the stroke 7 years ago, I do still have some that's my friends, right?
Of course.
They had one lined up for me, not fortunately. Her man took six, so then she had to back out, right?
And the nurse that did it last year is not available?
No, she can't get the time off this year.
Did they have a good time?
Did they come back and hurt me if they could?
Good.
Because we all have one big family, Jonathan, there, right?
Right.
And we have a lot of fun. And, like, there's not only me. I can tell you there's probably a dozen or two people that go on a trip a year to get to see their friends, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, and the nurse or the LPN or the paramedic, they don't just sit in the room. They can go out and participate in all the events with us too, right?
Well, I would hope that would be the case, for sure.
Oh, yeah, they have a good time. We have dances and sing-along and music, and so we have a good time.
And you got a pool, you got a park, you got everything there at this memorial camp.
And I'd force it to be sad if we couldn't have it, right?
Right.
And can I leave my number in case anyone's listening will call? That wouldn't let know someone would call me?
Dana, I would appreciate it if you would do that, please.
Okay, 248 5154.
5154.
Yeah, and hopefully something if they're listening might be able to help us.
Tell us about the 6.5 years after your stroke.
After my stroke? Of course, I talked to you a long time ago. I used to go to Rivers and Newfoundland Labrador Disabled Sports. And after having a stroke, I can't do that no more because I'm paralyzed on one side now.
Right.
I lost my sight when I was 12, and I was 38 when I had the stroke.
Whew.
So it really turned my life upside down. And thanks to my mom quit her job to stay home and take care of me. And she actually takes me to camp.
Okay.
So I'm lucky, isn't I?
You are very lucky, sir.
Yeah.
So the stroke itself, was anyone with you when you had it?
Yeah, I went to bed that night feeling fine, perfectly. Because I had another home care worker. My mom was working home care outside my home, and my aunt was working with me, and she come down. I had vomit everywhere. She told Mom she better get home. There's something wrong with me.
Right.
And when he got to my room where I was at, I was down on the floor.
Choking.
I couldn't move.
Okay.
But, you know, John, it could be a lot worse. And there's always someone worse than like me and you are, right?
Absolutely, sir.
But you always got to keep smiling.
I agree. I truly and wholeheartedly agree, and I admire that level of energy and enthusiasm. And Dana, I want to share with you, there's a longtime listener who I believe is listening tonight from the Con River region who requires 24-hour home care. And he is trying to, for many years, has been trying to lobby the government to get him access to 24-hour home care so he can go and live his dreams to be a student.
But, Tom, listen, wherever you are, don't give up. Keep fighting. Because I tell you, Jonathan, this person, I fought the government for 4 years before Mom would be able to stay and take care of me. Because he was outside working as a home care worker. But I fought him. We won it. So that now means she's with me day and night, but they only last her 40 hours. They won't last her 25 care, right? But tell them not to give up. Keep fighting them.
Well, that's just it, right? You can have a worker even for the 40 hours a week, but it isn't 24-hour care, so you would require at least two.
Well, I mean, look, I try to tell the government, what did he think? What is it, like, they only pay Mom Monday to Friday. What do you think happens to me on Saturday and Sunday?
That's right.
I mean, the government don't care. That's what it's all about with them. They don't care, but they only a number.
Or they can't pay. It's one or two, right?
Well, they should think about this person. They should think about his care, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he needs 24-hour care, he should be allowed to have it.
Well, his father and perhaps his mother, I can't remember the entire story at the moment. They look after him, but of course he wants to move away to go to school from Conn River, somewhere I think in the city of St. John's, and he tried it at the high school level, and it was just too challenging for him. And
but you tell, if he's listening, if he ever wants to talk to someone positive, you tell him to call, I'll tell him to call me.
You got it, boss.
And I'll be glad to talk to him, because, I mean, he should never give up. Keep fighting.
I'll pass that message on, and thank you very much, Dana.
And hopefully you can find a nurse or an LPN or a paramedic. Hopefully someone's listening can help us.
Hopefully we can find someone for you. The deadline's not too far away.
I'll call back one day next week and just talk on the morning show, too.
Please do.
Get the word to everybody, all right?
Thank you, Dana.
All right, John, but tell the man to keep fighting.
Don't be a stranger. Call me next week, too.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good night, buddy.
You too. Bye-bye. You're right. People don't just stop what they're doing for Saturday and Sunday because they don't have their 24-hour care. Yeah, and Trevor, I hope you're listening. And I'll be in touch over the next few days, and we'll pass on Dana's contact information. We're going to go to the break. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Hi, welcome back to the show. Bouncy castle, pony rides, face painting, games, music, and food. Saturday, tomorrow, at Spruce Park Soccer Pitch, there is a fun day in the park. It is free. Presented by the Northern Cross Community Church, come by the Spruce Park Soccer Field at Juniper Street and Hamilton River Road for a fun day in the park. Starting at 10:30, ending at 2. Food, games, I mentioned it already, Bouncy Castle. Pony rides, face painting, music, all free, no admission, no tickets. Bring your family, friends, and your own chair or blanket to relax. That's at 400 Kellen Drive. Actually, that's where it's going to be moving if it rains. It's going to go to the Northern Cross Church building at 400 Kellen Drive. Fun day in the park. Boss, how can you say no to that? We're going to Sheila Lee on line number one. Hello, Sheila.
Hello, Jonathan.
Have you heard the good news that Bono and the Edge are going to be at Ottawa on Canada Day? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's good news, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to talk to you for a few minutes about something really special we're having here tomorrow.
Sure.
I'm calling now from Riverhead, St. Mary's Bay.
Lovely area.
Yeah. And we have, for the past 15 years, this is our 15th year, we've been having an annual Run for Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to do that to set aside a special time as close as possible to Canada Day, but not on Canada Day, to specifically remember that whole generation of young men who lost their lives in that famous battle at Beaumont Hamel. So what's happening here tomorrow is, which is similar to any other year, except we're calling it Run for Freedom Canada 150. Because we're hoping to have 150 competitive runners and walkers from all over the province descending upon our community tomorrow morning.
Wow.
Yeah, and the competitive runners are going to do an 8-kilometer run, and the walkers are going to do a 5-kilometer walk. And when the finish line is at right next to our Legion. We have a beautiful Legion here in Riverhead.
You sure do.
Around 62. Mm-hmm. So when they cross over the line, we're going to have, as we've had for the past 15 years, we have specially designed medals for everybody. And then, of course, they grab water because they're so thirsty. And then they come into our Legion, and we have a real feast for them. We have homemade soups. Oh, we have lovely fresh sandwiches. We have fruit. We have yogurt. We have desserts, tea and coffee, all that kind of stuff. And then when they're well fed, we have a beautiful solemn ceremony where we spend a few minutes reflecting upon the Battle of Beaumont Hamel. And we have a guest speaker. we have a beautiful priest here in our Good Shepherd Parish. His name is Father Steve Courtney. And Father Steve Courtney, I remember last year on the Canada Day, and we had a special mass in our church, and a beautiful sermon he gave to the people about his thoughts and reflections and involvement in different things connected with that battle or with the war. So he's going to be our guest speaker, and to anybody who have heard him will say that he is amazing, the way he can capture your interest and hold your attention. Not going to be a long speech, of course.
Okay.
Then we're going to have special large medals for the different age categories, first, second, and third, being presented. And then the ultimate thing is going to be we have this plaque that was designed by a local artist, Owen Whalen, and it shows the soldiers coming out of the trenches, and the runners running towards them, and the expression on it is, they set the course. And
wow.
The top female and male runner will have their name presented the plaque, and their name will be engraved on it, you know, their name, their time. And we have a beautiful cake for Canada 150 that we're going to have. We haven't decided yet who's going to cut that. I'm going to pick two people that really touches me tomorrow in this special celebration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have prizes. We have 10 really nice prizes. The top male and female athletes are going to get a Canada 150 watch. And we're going to also have one of those watches for a draw.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're over $100 each. And we're having other prizes besides, of course, for everybody. We're going to have a lot of volunteers involved, right from our fire department, who will be leading the going ahead of the runners, to our RCMP, who will be behind the runners. We'll have volunteers watching traffic. We had volunteers tonight preparing food. We have more there serving tomorrow. We have people in all kinds of capacities there, which shows the strong volunteer effort we have in Riverhead.
Wow.
And in addition to that, we will have people from not just Riverhead. We always try to look at a regional approach. So there'll be people coming from neighboring communities tomorrow to repair Hadith. There'll be people coming from throughout the province. We even had somebody fly in, especially from Alberta last year. So it's going to be a beautiful event. And, of course, it's a registration fee. The competitive runners pay $20, because when you take in the cost of the medals, the cost of the food, and the cost of the chip, they have the chip to be able to have their time recorded when they come over the finish line. And the walkers, they won't have chips. Where there's $10 for them, and of course our children, our high school children, if they're competitive runners, we don't charge them anything; they're free. So it's starting at 10 o'clock. Registration starts anytime after 8:30. Some people are pre-registered already in St. John's, but some will be registering here. And it's going to be, I think, an absolutely, as it has in the past 14 years, going to be an absolutely beautiful day.
Sounds like a beautiful day. I wish I wasn't occupied. I would certainly head up there to have a look.
Yeah.
Congratulations. This is a wonderful event, 15 years in the making, one might say.
Yeah.
Sheila Lee, do me a favor. Give me a call on Monday and let me know how it went.
I will. And I should also add before I leave you is that there may be some people out there who say, oh, my God, sure, I can't walk or I can't run. But I say to them, come on anyway, because just be part of this ceremony. Just be part of the feeling you get when you go in there in that room and you get to that atmosphere, that the region is beautifully decorated. And you get that feeling as if you're almost over on that battlefield, you know?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things we can do to encourage people to exercise, especially those who say, oh, I can't exercise because my arm is bad.
That's
well,
right.
I say, you know, your two legs work, don't they?
Yeah. Anyway, hoping we're going, you know, encouraging people to get out. We're hoping the weather's going to cooperate. It was giving back for rain, but it seems now that might hold off. But even if it does rain a little bit, that's a small sacrifice to make compared to what those young men did over 100 years ago.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, Jonathan, I just wanted to get the word out there, and, you know, and I hope sometime that you'll get to come up and visit our community.
It's been a while since I've been out that way, so thank you, Sheila. I'll give you a jingle when I make some plans. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and one more thing, then I'll leave you. Your dear dad was our doctor, our family doctor, for many, many years, so I'd like for you to make sure you give him my best wishes.
I will. So he told you the terrible jokes while he looked at your eyeballs, did he?
He told me a few.
It's amazing they call that a doctor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Creative man.
Certainly is.
Okay, dear. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Sheila. Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sure, I know Dad's not listening. It's past his bedtime. We're going to line number two. We're speaking with James Reed from Sandbox Gaming. What are you at, James?
I'm good. Doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Another marathon?
Yeah, we're on our 14th marathon, about 9.5 hours in now. So.
Oh, man. What are you playing?
Right now, we have a few girls on playing Until Dawn.
Okay. I'm unfamiliar with that game. I stopped paying attention to video games when Civilization was invented.
Well,
the game.
Invented, okay, yeah, that's
the game.
A while ago.
Yeah, so I'm still playing the newest version, number 6, and I got to say, man, what a fantastic ride that is. So I'm more of a turn-based strategy versus a first-person shooter, but you folks at Sandbox Gaming, you do it all. So tell us, what are you raising money for this time around? Still for children's charities, I would assume?
Yeah, so this time around we're raising money for our 2017 charity fund. So for this year, we picked 4 charities to basically get all the funds raised throughout the year. We'll have a little ceremony in January 2018 presenting them, what we raised this year. We did the same this past January for last year's funds. Last year, we raised about $19,000 for local children's charities. And, hoping to top that this year.
That's a pretty modest target. You want to get past $19,000? Should be pretty easy.
We're at about... little over, almost 4,500 now for this marathon, so.
I think that after 9 hours, that's a fantastic amount of money to have raised. Do these come from individual donors, or are they, larger corporate donors?
So what we have now is a bit of a mix. So we do advanced fundraising, like our volunteers go and see what funds they can get on their own.
Right.
We also have a few sponsors. A few of our big ones are Escape Quest and Midgard Gaming. Mm-hmm. So they're both on and for bronze sponsors. And we recently had a charity trivia night, which was the funds raised that night also were put into our charity fund as well.
Wonderful. So that's smart to have some pre-fundraising before the fundraiser. I think that's the way that
it definitely gets the momentum mm-hmm. and morale going into it. With I think we went in with about $3,500. So
yeah. That's great. James, I have to ask, is David Marr there?
No, he's not. I have not seen him yet.
Too busy Pokemoning, is he?
I don't know. Huh. You can never track that man down.
No. He's a hard man to track down. But if he gets there, hopefully you guys will kick his butt in Pokemon, because he says he's the champion, but I'm pretty sure that's Jeff Smythe.
Yeah, definitely. David says a lot of things. I wouldn't believe him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know, right? Anyway, in all seriousness, how many members are there of Sandbox or in Sandbox Gaming, and how can one contribute or become a member?
Hard to peg exactly how many. Where we're such a large group, people do come and go pretty often. We usually stay around 40 to 50, semi-consistent members. Some weekly meetings will have up to that much. Some will have, a little less. Kind of depends on the time of year and stuff. But I would say, on average, around that. If people want to get involved, we have our meetings every Wednesday at 5 p.m.
Right.
They happen at Memorial University in the engineering building.
Okay.
In room 4008. You do not need to be a Munn student to attend. It's just where we host our meetings, just convenient to get the room. But yeah, anyone's welcome to come out to the meetings and get involved.
I don't know of any organization that meets once a week. That's pretty interesting. Why do you do it on such a frequent basis?
Well, we have events pretty often. We usually, most time of the year, we have about 2 to 3 events per month. So we got to meet often to keep on top of that, and plus anything else we might have going on, like our charity events. And we have the New Flying Gaming Expo coming up next month, which mm-hmm. is a big one, takes a lot of planning. Mm-hmm. So that's July 21st to 23rd. Really excited for that, too. That's our next big thing, but we got to get through this weekend first.
Where's that happening, by the way?
July 21st, 22nd.
Where?
23rd, I mean. Oh, where? That's at Memorial University.
At the university, you're doing the gaming expo. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We have a lot of rooms.
All right. So I guess people can avail of, I think, one of the most fun things to go see is watch our future world leaders have fun interacting without any sort of conflict. And you have friendly competition. Whether you're kicking butt in various games, but what you're doing is you're doing it in a fun way, and it truly is a safe space.
Yes, definitely. We have it's basically all things gaming. So it's an all-age event, except for the Friday night we have a trivia mixer. But the Saturday and Sunday, all day, all things gaming, family-friendly. We'll have board games, tournaments, anything you can think of.
Oh, good.
Probably.
Board games, huh? All right. Well, I'll bring a few senior nerds, and perhaps we'll come in and show you how it's done. All right, James.
Play a bit of Settlers of Catan.
I'm so over that game, man. Have you heard of Orléans?
No, I don't think I have.
All right. Are you a board gamer, or are you...
A bit of both, for sure.
Okay. Try Orléans. It's quite wonderful, but Catan... I don't know. Carcassonne is a wonderful alternative to that, and you can do a lot more backstabbing, so I certainly appreciate that one a bit more. James Reed, thank you very much. You do have a website. What is it?
Sandboxgaming.org. You can watch the stream, donate, chat, anything you want to do. Please share the event, get the word out. It's all for a great cause, and it's a lot of fun.
And why Sandbox? Does that refer to the type of open concept gaming where you can do anything at any time?
Funny enough, no, but kind of. So the concept for the name is everyone's equal in a sandbox. So we wanted to make this really welcoming community and show that, you know, everyone, all gamers, non-gamers, everyone's equal. And it's just meant to be a really welcoming group.
Love it. Thank you very much. And that's a great philosophy. Good night, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Last comment before we go to the last break of the week. Steve Brazel, who's listening and tweeting in from Calgary, says, I live in Calgary. Alberta. I drive 45 minutes to get to 6 Costcos. It's a 34-minute drive from St. John's Airport to Spaniards Bay, to put it into perspective. So if Al from Torbay or anyone who's commenting on the issue of driving all the way to Galway to go get your tub of mayonnaise or whatever you do get at Costco, there you go. Put it into perspective. And he's absolutely right. And thank you very much, Steve, not only for listening all the way up there, but for your comment. Anyone can do so. At VOCM Nightline is our Twitter account. Follow along. I'm sure not all of you are robots. Most of you are, though. 15,000 followers. How could it be possible, Patrick? Mom's only one. Yeah. All right, we're going to go to the break. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to line number one, your friend and mine, Leo Quilty. How you doing, Leo?
Not too bad at all. Yourself?
I'm good. What's on your mind tonight?
I phoned in about what's bothering me is these commercials now on television. They're showing somebody having a stroke, and accidents and whatever. Who puts that on there anyway, I wonder? Have you seen it?
No, I don't watch TV.
You don't watch TV? And it's, they had a few on there, you know, they put them on there, you know, like somebody rising to dump plates, high voltage wire, and, you know, another fellow signed down a limb and he hits high voltage wire. Another one there that, I don't know who got mine. I said, it must be the, but anyway, there's another one there. This fellow is taking a stroke, you know, and his family is around him. But see, I don't know why they put that garbage on, really. You know,
I don't know. Like, what's the purpose of the commercial?
What's the purpose of it? Well, what's the good of it? Well, it's just trying to make you aware of, you know, they're trying to get you to don't go sign down trees around transmission line, or don't go right here, don't underneath a high voltage wire, and look after your health, I suppose, so that you don't have a stroke or heart attack.
Oh, I see. So you watch a commercial to tell you to not saw things off of trees without looking for power lines and things like that. Okay, so I mean, there are radio ads like that too, right?
Yeah, there's radio ads, so there is. But I mean, say, like, for instance, my father got killed in an industrial accident, and I've watched these things, and that was 50-odd years ago, and every time I see them, he comes back, you know? And if, say, for instance, these things where, you know, you're getting a picture of directing out somebody getting a stroke, and he's found down, and everybody's excited, the family is all upset and everything. And what do you think, you know, that people feel that went through that?
Yeah, people today call that a trigger.
It's a trigger, but the damn worst is, I mean, say, every 5 minutes sometimes it's on there, you know, and you just, it'll catch you, and you haven't got time to turn it off. You know, because I don't want to watch it. There's other people that don't want to watch it either.
Yeah, I suppose it's hard to be rude.
Who do you phone or who do you get hold of to complain about this stuff?
I don't know. You're going to have to tell me who puts the commercial on.
Well, it's a health thing, I guess. Probably, I don't know, probably Eastern Health or Western Health or whatever, you know.
So call them.
Yeah, I call them probably, yeah.
Yeah. Or call the network that's putting this on. Are you watching the NTV or are you watching the CBC? What are you watching?
Both of it. Huh. They have it on both of it, yeah. Okay. Both of the Newfoundland channels.
I think it's important for us to be reminded of things that we shouldn't do, safety precautions, just like we have speed limits on the side of the road, and just like we need to be told more often to get off our arses and go get some exercise as opposed to have that extra bag of chips.
You can tell people that stuff on the hill freezes over, and it's not going to take no effect on them. You take what happened here the other day on that transmission line, you know. Now, safety first is a big thing, and it's been a big thing. It wasn't a big thing too much when I was working, and I worked, I don't know, 50 or 60 years or however long I worked, and I had a couple of little accidents, but that was it, and I always watched what I was doing.
I hate to tell you things, though, Leo, but things change.
Yes, things change, but, I mean, say, they're doing stuff on that transmission line, for instance, that I would have got the hell out of it. Because I remember we were fighting forest fires. For instance, if we were in camp, we were working around the woods camps. If there was a fire, we had to go. And in later years, they brought in helicopters. The water bomber was there, and they had a helicopter spotting. And after the fire got out, the helicopter came in and come down on top of you. We were spraying the fire, what was left of it, with water cans. And the helicopter come down right down on top of us. And I got the hell out of it, you know. And the superintendent said, you know, no. He said, I said, no, I'm not walking around working underneath that thing. Mm-hmm. Because, they tend to fall in the sky scatter time. And he said, no. He said, what the idea is there? He said, they're stirring up the fire. You know, the wind from the blades is stirring up the hidden fires, more or less. You know, that was the idea. But I was watching these fellows here the other day. I mean, say, these poles, they're being placed here by helicopter. And you've got three or four fellows, or half a dozen fellows, probably a dozen fellows, down and underneath that helicopter, and they're trying to fit that tower into where it bids, you know, where it goes into a bedding. And they're all there, and the damn thing is flicking around and flying around, and, you know, the helicopter probably would have wind or anything like that. I wouldn't. I'm going to tell you, you want to pay me some money to get at that.
Well, people are paid some money to get at that, and that's just like underwater welders and people who go down 900-foot holes to do certain things. It's you get risk pay for something like that, and that's the exception to the rule, Leo. But generally, for the most of us who are the fattest, oldest, and laziest in Canada, we need to be reminded what a stroke is and how to avoid it.
No, you don't have to bear in mind. We know. I mean, say anybody.
No, we don't.
Anybody with the IQ of a budgie bird. I know. I'm 80 years old now, and I've got high blood pressure, and I got blacked out freeze, and I got this. If I turns around tomorrow and eats a dozen egg yolks or a pound of bacon or anything like that, I know damn well I'm not doing myself no good or smokes a pack of cigarettes. I don't smoke that, and you know, but I give it up. But I mean, say if I know, I'm well aware of that. They don't have to tell me that,
Leo. If people were able to learn from mistakes that a lot of us make in our lives at a very early age and not smoke or not have eating habits or poor exercise habits that will cost the health system a tremendous amount of money down the road, don't you think commercials like that are worthwhile?
No. They're doing more harm than good, really. I mean, say, if I had backed into a high voltage wire or whatever, and I've been gone to hell now, but I mean, say, my family, every time they'd see an ad or a commercial like that, that'd bring me right back to them and what happened and what they went through.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to leave it there. We got one more call to fit in here, but thank you for this interesting perspective. And Leo, I expect to have another deadly old Friday night conversation with you next week.
I don't get in much now because I'm mostly out around late. By the time I get in, it's almost too late to call. You know,
listen, I love finishing the week with you. Let's do it.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, my friend.
You have a good weekend.
You too, brother. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Loves it. All right, we're going to line number two. We're finishing the show. We got a few minutes. We're speaking with Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I was listening to the show this morning, and they were talking about the OCI plant in Fortune, and the fact that the government has given them some exemptions to ship fish whole, I guess, ship it out whole.
Yes.
And they were also, I think, complaining about, you know, maybe this was the FFAW complaining that, you know, a lot of jobs are lost because that fish is not brought ashore and processed. You know, I think we're kind of living, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when all the fish was filleted and all the fish was skinned and all the bones were picked out, but all that was being sold in the U.S. But now, you know, markets have moved, you know, I guess as a result of the codfish moratorium, markets, we've had to, you know, find new markets for different things. And one of the things is the Asian market for whole fish. You sell the skin, you sell the bones. That market is taken right off.
So, sure. We should be able to we should be able to have more processing here where we can take advantage of the skin and the bones and the eyeballs and everything like that. We should be making pet food. We should be making oil capsules. We should be doing everything, darn it all. But we're not. You're right.
Yeah, no. But I guess shipping the whole fish to Asia is I think a good thing to do because the market is there and they buy product with the skin on and with the bones in. They buy a whole fish, which, you know, traditionally our markets didn't like that, especially in the U.S.
No.
Some markets, like shrimp, for example, that has to be frozen and processed at sea. Some markets of shrimp. The Japanese market just wants a live shrimp processed. You can't do that in our regular shrimp fishery. Because it takes 2 or 3 days before you see the shrimp, so you can't freeze it. You can't process it alive.
Where can you do that?
On board a boat. That's fishing shrimp.
Right, and you process it right there.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we have a brand new. Not a brand new. We have a boat that's being retrofitted by OCI for that very purpose. And many people are wondering why government that seems to be cheerleading for. No more giveaways and more processing here on the island would approve of something like this. I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my head around it, Paul, and I'll be honest, I haven't been able to give it enough time this week when my brain is functioning to provide any sort of analysis above a grade 5. So I don't know. Your points are interesting, and I promise I will listen to this conversation again over the weekend and apply it to whatever I read. Let's set a date for maybe Tuesday, and we can discuss this again.
Sure. Sure, take it easy.
Thank you. And how's the weather up there?
Well, it's kind of hot here in Toronto. It's not too bad, but it's a bit too hot. Like an air conditioning.
Good. Well, enjoy it and take it all in. And I hope you get a couple of good lightning storms this summer because that's one of the things I miss from the mainland.
I tell you, we had a lot of thunder and lightning last night or this morning. The room would light up with lightning, and then boom, you'd hear the thunder.
It's make no wonder people believed in so many different superpowers back in the day.
There you go.
It's a beautiful thing. Thank you, Paul. Have a great weekend, sir, and I appreciate the call.
Okay, take care.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thank you to all our listeners. Alberta, Ontario, Scotland, everyone who is listening to us from far and away. On behalf of myself and producer Patrick Myler, it's been a great week, an educational and informative one. We'll check it out on Monday night. Until then, Lila Tuff.